I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, investigation underway. Authorities work to uncover new details on the airplane that collided with a Black Hawk helicopter. We have the latest. Planning ahead. GOP House members are divided how to pass President Trump's agenda. We're on Capitol Hill. Freedom of religion. We speak to a public school teacher who was asked to remove a crucifix from her desk. And read all about it. We take a look at the latest exhibition at the Vatican Apostolic Library. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, a new video out today shows a different angle of the deadly air collision in Washington, D.C. Wednesday night. But we want to warn you, you may find it disturbing. The video obtained by CNN shows the Black Hawk helicopter crashing into the American Airlines jet, sending both aircrafts into the water. Today, there are more questions than answers as investigators try to piece together what happened. Tragically, 67 people were killed, and it could be a while before concrete findings are made. EWTN's Owen Jensen joins us now with the latest.
Well, good evening. Here's where things stand tonight. Police boats have returned to the Potomac River as part of the recovery efforts and investigation. More than 40 bodies have been pulled from the river, and the plane's so-called black boxes have been recovered.
In the Potomac River, 2 days after an American Airlines flight collided with an Army helicopter, the massive recovery effort continues, as does the investigation. These pictures showing National Transportation Safety Board investigators examining the cockpit voice recorder and flight data recorder recovered from the American Airlines passenger jet.
What's happened here is we most likely had a multitude of different issues, whether it be from understanding where a plane is, what an altitude is, what the speed is. Every one of those will be contributing factors to what is ultimately a horrible tragedy.
President Donald Trump continues to weigh in, posting on social media today. The Black Hawk helicopter was flying too high, by a lot. It was far above the 200-foot limit. That's not really too complicated to understand, is it? And in the White House press briefing room today,
aviation safety was addressed by President Trump before this tragic collision even took place. On his second day in office, the president signed a memorandum to immediately stop Biden DEI hiring programs and return to non-discriminatory, merit-based hiring.
The deadliest aviation disaster in the U.S. in almost a quarter century, claiming 67 lives, including more than a dozen figure skaters, their friends heartbroken by the loss.
Just receiving this news in the morning was completely devastating to us. And as the time going on now, it's not getting easier, seeing pictures everywhere. And it's just a constant reminder of the tragic event that it took place yesterday.
And more stories emerging of those who lost their lives. Sarah Lee Best and Elizabeth Ann Keyes were law firm associates. And Ryan O'Hara from Georgia was a soldier, one of three, on board the military helicopter. As investigators try to pinpoint what went wrong, one well-known pilot emphasized the critical importance of safety.
We need to be building a lot more safety into our systems so that there are multiple layers of safety, and a single mistake, a single error, a single exceedance should not cause a fatal crash.
The NTSB says it hopes to have the preliminary report out in 30 days, but the overall investigation will take a year. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
So tragic. All right, let's bring in Kit Darby, a nationally recognized airline pilot with 35 years of experience. Kit, good to be with you today. Not a whole lot of answers right now when it comes to this tragic collision, but what we do know, as Owen mentioned, is that the black boxes from the American Airlines plane have been recovered. What do you think we'll learn from those recorders?
Well, regrettable, we don't have recorders on the helicopter, so that's going to be the big question. But the ones on the airplane, it's a late model airplane that'll have everything about that airplane recorded. And we'll have the voice track from the pilots. So we'll know all about that one. The flight recorder sort of tells us what's happening with the airplane. The voice recorder sort of what the pilots are thinking, what they're doing. On the helicopter, we're left with without that type, that level of information. We'll have radar showing us the ground track. There's the altitude, of course, very important. It's restricted to 200 feet in that area, which is very low. I haven't seen good data on the altitude yet. I mean, there's a lot of speculation that the helicopter was too high, and that may be true, but I haven't been able to verify it. He had his some of his equipment turned off, and the other equipment, military, I haven't seen the data on that yet.
Yeah, so a lot of questions around that for sure. Kit, I want to talk now about what was going on at air traffic control at that time. You know, according to a report, that night, one person was doing the job of two people managing air traffic for helicopters as well as airplanes. Could this have been a factor, or do you think it's the reason this tragedy happened?
Well, it's certainly a possibility, one of many, you know, without all the information yet. But there, it's not uncommon to combine frequencies in periods of low activity or inactive airports. So usually ground and tower at inactive airports. In this case, they've combined the two airborne frequencies, and they're using different frequencies. So not only do we have reduced staff, but we also have one aircraft not able to hear the other, which lowers their situational awareness. My guess is that this airplane had no idea this helicopter was there and wasn't looking for it. On the other hand, the helicopter said he saw the traffic and would pass behind it. So at that point, the helicopter is very maneuverable. It should be able to avoid the airplane. The trouble is vision at night is only about 10% of what it is in the daytime. The airplane's one light of many lights out there. He could have either not seen the right one or not seen it at all. And been unable to avoid it due to depth perception. And we're talking about wearing night vision goggles, which is like looking through binoculars, limits your field of vision, and that also reduces your depth perception. So they might have seen it and been unable to avoid it, or they may have looked and seen another airplane perhaps coming to another runway.
Yeah, and maybe we'll know more answers when this preliminary report comes out in 30 days. What can you expect to learn from that?
Well, the report will have all these many of these pieces, although not final, it should have the basic information and a reasonably reliable conclusion, although it's not final. So we'll know about air traffic control. We'll know about everything about the airplane. We'll have the best information we can find on the helicopter. And that will probably explain what happened, but it won't be final for quite a while.
Yeah, and Kit, a lot of people asking right now, is it safe to fly? Your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Well, I like to give it, you know, I'm sort of statistically based kind of guy. I go by the numbers. We have 30 million plus flights in this country on an annual basis. Some of our large airlines, you know, Delta, United, American, have a million flights a year. We have a tremendous exposure here. And the actual safety record, I love to equate it to driving. Everybody drives, and we're going to drive ourselves to the airport. We don't hesitate to do that, even in Atlanta with their outrageous driving. But when we do that, it's about 20 times less safe than getting on this airplane, climbing to 30,000 feet, going to the West Coast in a few hours at 600 miles an hour. So the 600 mile an hour part is 20 times safer than the 60 mile an hour part of driving yourself to the airport, where if something goes wrong, you can simply pull off to the side of the road in your car, and you can't really do that in an airplane. So I wouldn't hesitate to fly myself or put my family on an airplane because of this incident. These are extremely rare, and the odds are very much in your favor that it is the safest mass transportation system available.
Okay. Thank you so much for insights. I lived in Atlanta for many years, so I know about driving there for sure. Thank you for your time, sir. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
While the U.S. House was not in session this week, most Republicans were in Florida for a three-day policy retreat, and they are attempting to find a path forward to pass President Trump's agenda. However, many left that meeting feeling frustrated due to a lack of a final plan. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with that story. Eric?
Good evening. Republican leaders had high hopes that a meeting at President Trump's Florida resort would unite GOP House members and present them a clear path forward, but that's not the case for everyone. Despite that, at his closing news conference, House Speaker Mike Johnson painted a very rosy picture of the meeting, saying that he's confident Republicans can meet the moment.
We believe that we are going to engage now in what can be the greatest, one of the greatest pieces of legislation in the history of the United States Congress, because it will be so consequential, because we have to fix everything, and we have a mandate from the people to do so. So we're building consensus, we're putting together a blueprint.
The speaker adds his goals to pass a budget by late February and target trillions in federal spending cuts.
My hope, my admonition to the colleague, my colleagues here, is that we set a number that's really a floor in what we hope to achieved by savings and not the ceiling. And there's a lot of strategic reasons for that. But so stay tuned for the number. It will be substantial because it has to be.
But some members of the Freedom Caucus remain unconvinced. Congressman Chip Roy, who did not attend the retreat, said in a statement, quote, "They put forward solutions that are not going to reduce the deficits. That is a non-starter for me. I'm on the team, but I'm on Team Trump. Team getting the solutions done to deliver spending restraint." Democrats accuse Speaker Johnson and Republicans of shutting them out of the process.
They intend to pass a spending agreement on their own, to avoid a government shutdown on their own, and to raise the debt ceiling on their own. They've had no communications with us.
We're dealing with an extreme ideology that is going to be pushing through many extreme things that the American people didn't vote for. They voted for change simply because they didn't like how high costs had gone up in the post-pandemic era. They're not getting costs coming down.
Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, a frequent critic of Republican leadership, says that she just wants them to get started on something. She wrote on X, saying in part, quote, "I hope to know a framework of our plan. I hope this doesn't turn into another bill with thousands of pages dumped on us with less than 72 hours to read it all before we have to vote on the eve of another government shutdown." Speaker Johnson wants to follow a very tight timeline, pass a budget by the end of February. Then he hopes that the Republican-controlled House will be able to approve a massive package of priorities, including tax cuts, emergency aid, and border security by early April. But all eyes will be on a group of conservative members who can make or break the process. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
The White House says President Trump is moving forward with new tariffs on Canada, Mexico, and China. The measures are set to take effect tomorrow and would amount to a 25% duty on Mexico and Canada and a 10% tariff on China. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says Canada is ready to deliver a strong response to any tariffs imposed by the U.S. Critics fear that tariffs could drive up prices for everyday Americans. While hostage families in Gaza are celebrating the news that three male hostages are set to be released tomorrow. The release is set to be the fourth since the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas took hold this month. In the first phase of the agreement, around 33 Israeli captives are expected to be freed in exchange for almost 2,000 Palestinian prisoners. A relative of twin brothers being held in Gaza spoke on the importance of bringing everyone home.
"Now we need you more than ever, the support and the hugs of the nation, as that is what is empowering the hostages, the presence of everyone here with us until the return of the last hostage."
The president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is defending the organization after criticism from Vice President J.D. Vance. In his interview with CBS Face the Nation, the vice president said that the USCCB should, quote, "look in the mirror," suggesting that in its efforts to help immigrants, it was more interested in its bottom line. Speaking to an Italian TV station, Archbishop Timothy Broglio responded to the criticisms, calling them false. He goes on to say that the criticisms, quote, "have strongly affected us because, first of all, they are not true. We spend more than we receive to help the poor," and that the USCCB has always insisted on respect for the law, but we have to respond to the concrete situation. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including punished for the faith. After a teacher refused to remove her crucifix from her desk, the school took action. We hear from her tonight. And your Saturday Costco run could be in jeopardy where workers are striking. We'll tell you next. Thinking about shopping at Costco this weekend, well, you may bump into some employees who are going on strike. Teamster union members authorized a strike if a deal is not reached for wage increases and improved benefits. While negotiations are underway, members of the warehouse club in states like Virginia, New Jersey, and California could see a long-term impact in product shortage. All right, now to Nicaragua, where ongoing Catholic persecution is now impacting a community of nuns in an event labeled as a night of terror. The Ortega regime in Nicaragua forced the Poor Clare nuns to leave their monasteries with some of their belongings. As reported by our sister agency, Osley Prensa, Martha Patricia Molina, a longtime researcher of these constant religious attacks in the South American country, says their whereabouts are still unknown. Well, back here in the United States, a public school teacher in Connecticut says she was suspended without pay after refusing to remove a crucifix beside her desk. According to First Liberty Institute, the teacher, who is Catholic, says school officials also threatened her job. The allegations are from a tenured teacher at De Loreto Elementary and Middle School. Officials from New Britain, Connecticut, dispute the claims, telling Fox News that federal and state laws prohibit teachers in public schools from prominently displaying religious symbols on the walls of their classrooms. And to learn more about her case, we turn now to Marisol Arroyo Castro, as well as Keisha Russell, senior counsel at First Liberty Institute, which is defending Marisol. Ladies, thank you both so much for coming on today. We appreciate it. Marisol, I want to start with you. Tell us about the incident with the crucifix and some of the back and forth between you and the school officials.
Well, basically, it was them asking me to take down the cross. I had a text message from him asking me to attend a meeting regarding my cross. So I didn't know anything else that he could tell me about my cross. No, he wasn't going to have a meeting because he liked it. But he at the meeting, he told me that I need to take it down. And that was really shocking to know that that was the case. And I asked him what would happen if I didn't take it down. And he said that I would be it would be considered insubordination in my part, and that I had like a day or until that, the end of that day to take it down.
Marisol, I understand you had the crucifix on display for quite some time now. What did they say as to the reason why now?
Well, he stated that it was a violation of the law, the Connecticut law, state law required me not to have the cross there, and that I was in violation of that by having it. So I said to him, is that a policy, like a district policy? He said, no, it's not a district policy. It's the law. It's the Constitution.
Keisha, what would you say to that?
Well, that's absolutely incorrect. The law allows Marisol to have this crucifix in her personal workspace, just like other teachers in that school are allowed to have secular material in their workspace. That means the free speech and the free exercise clause protect Marisol. As for state law, Connecticut has what's called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and that act fully protects Marisol's private religious speech, and that's what this is. So the school district is absolutely wrong on this point, and it would behoove them and their taxpayers to give this up and leave Marisol alone. Otherwise, we will sue them.
Yeah, and Marisol, I want to go back to you. I know the principal at your school actually said that the crucifix was just an idol. How did you respond to that? How did that make you feel as a Catholic?
Wow, I was kind of heartbroken. I know that some people believe that. People who are not Catholic, that's a common misunderstanding and between Catholics and other denominations of Catholic of Christians. So, but it was shocking to hear him in particular call it an idol or associate this with worshiping some kind of idol. So it was very offensive.
Yeah, it seems like this has been really hard on you all around. How are you handling this, Marisol? And are you still on paid administrative leave?
I am. And I'm handling it with the power of God, because I wouldn't be able to take one breath if it wasn't for him. So I'm handling it.
I'm sure lots of prayers. We're all praying for you too. Keisha, I want to go back to you. What comes next in this case, and what kind of impact could it have, you know, in Connecticut and overall?
So that's a great question. You know, the last time we spoke to the district, which was Friday, they essentially put Marisol on administrative leave for another week. And, you know, the district has pushed back pretty hard. They don't agree with our legal position. And we realize that even though we're in a much friendlier administration now when it comes to religious liberty, that we still have a lot of work to do in order to educate government and even Americans about what the Constitution actually says and demands.
All right, we're going to leave it right there. Keisha, Marisol, thank you so much. We're going to continue to follow your case. Thank you both so much, and God bless.
Thank you.
God bless. Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Hitting the Road, the latest exhibit at the Vatican Library takes you across the globe and across time. We'll explain. Space agencies are keeping a close eye on a newly discovered asteroid that, according to them, has a tiny chance of striking the Earth in 2032. The odds of this happening are at slightly more than 1%. Scientists say the space rock has a size of a large building up to 328 feet tall. Asteroids of this size impact Earth every few thousand years, and they cause severe damage to local regions, according to the European Space Agency. Well, the Vatican Apostolic Library has now opened a new exhibition focused on travel tales, creative paths, and the time of pilgrimage. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittergren has more.
The Vatican Apostolic Library, home to centuries of travel stories, is a fitting venue for a new exhibition on world travelers. Titled En Route, the exhibition brings to life some of the 19th century greatest world tours and features rare artifacts and untold stories of early travelers. The name comes from the adventures of French journalist Lucien Leroy and Henri Papillot, who traveled the world in the late 1800s and funded their journey through the publication of a travel journal.
En route in French means on the road, and it's the title of this exhibition, which comes from one of the newspapers we are displaying. It's a very unusual publication because I believe it's the first, and probably also the only newspaper in the world that was published in different cities as two French travelers were making a journey around the world and to earn money. Rather than doing their jobs, they decided to publish this newspaper since they were journalists.
The exhibition also showcases the travels of Italian diplomat Cesare Poma. It is thanks to him that the Vatican Museums received an important collection of newspapers from some of the most remote parts of the world. These will be on display for the first time ever. The many historical journeys are narrated through the works of three contemporary artists who were presented this morning for journalists at a press conference in the Vatican. One of them is Icelandic artist Kristjana S. Williams. With the help of the Vatican archives, the artist and her team were able to create unique visual narratives.
Kristjana sees the world in a very unique way. She tells stories through her artwork. She uses beautiful images from a natural world. That's something that inspires her. She grew up in Iceland. It's black and white, monochromatic landscape. And she dreamt of exotic shores as she grew up. And she brings that fantastical sense of nature and colour and vivacity into her artwork. But she also works with Victorian engravings. So having access to the Vatican archives and being able to choose pieces to illustrate these stories was absolutely incredible for designers.
The exhibit also highlights how books can transport readers across time and place, offering another way to explore the world.
I'm almost certain it will inspire a great desire to travel. And more importantly, it will remind us that there are many ways to travel. You can travel by transportation, on foot, but perhaps that the farthest, the best, and the most meaningful journeys happen through books. In reality, every time we open a book, we travel. And the most distant places we've ever reached are likely the ones we've discovered through reading.
In Rome, Benedict Sedegrian, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.